There we go. Okay. All right, so welcome everyone, and thank you for taking the time this afternoon to come join us today for the Insurance Carrier Quarterly Meeting. We appreciate this opportunity to give y'all a look at what's happening here at DWC. And as always, we would like your feedback and help answer any questions you all may. We are going to have a quick look at the agenda for today. These are the topics that we'll be covering, and we'll be closing things out with remarks from Commissioner Nelson. But before we begin, I'm going to ask that you all stay muted during the presentations. Everybody can hear our speakers as clearly as possible. And I know we get some questions posted in the chat, and please just know that we will be getting to those as quickly as we can, either myself or another DWC staffer, to make sure we can get to those as best we can. We are going to go ahead and get things started with our compliance and investigations update with Deputy Commissioner Deborah Knight.
Let's go next slide.
I'm working on it. There we go.
That's me. So I'm Deputy Commissioner Deborah Knight, and compliance and investigations is my area, and four areas. It's audits and investigations and administrative enforcement, then the fraud investigations and the fraud prosecutions unit. So that's going to be the update that we'll go through. Next slide. So we'll start with the complaints. Next slide. Okay. So calendar year 2023 complaints, we received 858 complaints, and we've closed 969. We go ahead and put these in different buckets just so so we can look at them over the years to see if there's any spikes and any trends that we can see. And these are the buckets. Slides to you so y'all can see where those are. Next slide. So there we go. So we look at the complaints received by respondent type. We have the one for the attendance. Let's just go through the indemnity benefits. Is obviously our most complaints that we receive, anything to do with indemnity of benefits, and at 225. And of course, the respondent for that is our insurance carriers for most of the time. Medical benefits, 187, and the respondent is an insurance company, and 36 are healthcare providers. Next slide. So let's look at our audits. Next slide. So we have all the audits. We've had the death benefit audits. We initiated 24, and we've completed all 24 of them. We initiated for the initial payment of TIBS. We initiated 22, and we've completed 15 of them, and medical bill 19 and 8. Just to give you a little bit of information about those is that the when we looked at the death benefits, the we had, it's actually a death benefit in LIBS. We looked at the payment of those and the appropriate payment of those. We had a total underpayment in those of $115,000. About $115,842.71 precisely. And most of that was actually one claim, and it was a LIBS claim. So for that one. And we've talked about death benefits before, and we're looking now about for our audits for next year. And we'll of course meet with the commissioner and look at his priorities. But right now we are looking at doing death benefits again, reviewing death benefits. Next slide. Okay, fraud prosecutions, next slide. So we've had in FY 2023, we've had the fraud unit had 1,077 fraud referrals. Of those, I always say that wrong. We have 45, we have opened currently 45 fraud cases, and we've closed 52 during this fiscal year, and we've made 3 referrals for prosecutions. Next slide. The prosecution units have 6 convictions. 2 of those are employer convictions. Of the employer convictions, it was concealing payroll, so premium fraud. Both of those were payroll concealed. And then the 2 injured employees, one was a working and drawing, and the other was a they set up a business in order to submit workers' comp claims. And we've had one healthcare provider and one attorney. Next slide. So we've got enforcement. Next slide. So with enforcement, we've had close 369 cases for the calendar year. We've been reporting this as calendar year every time. So just so for consistency, I'll continue to report it calendar year. But just FYI, we've actually closed over 600 for the fiscal year for enforcement cases. We currently have 231 pending, and that is down from our last report of 344. So we're working, and our average days to close now is 185 days. So we're moving these cases much faster than we have historically been able to do. Part of that is we are now full. We have I always hate to say that because I got to knock on wood, but we have all the FTEs filled. We have hired the lead attorney for the enforcement area. So we have our entire group filled. Next slide. Of our pending cases by subject type, 196 of those are insurance carriers are the subject of those enforcement actions. 29 are healthcare providers, and 6 are other. Others include employers, attorneys, those types of things in our system. Next slide. So the by subject type, we have for closed, we've had 305 insurance closed cases where insurance was the respondent, 46 for healthcare providers, and 18 others. Next slide. Let's read that slide. So here, this one, you dig a little bit down more into those closed cases and what the results of those closed cases and how they ended. For insurance carriers, 215 resulted in was an order. Most of those are consent orders. 15 for healthcare providers and 3 others. Now, warning letters, we have 79 warning letters for those closed cases with insurance carriers, and 30 are healthcare providers. So what are we talking about? Warning letters is that we would usually like to start with a warning letter, but we also obviously would depend, we look at the factors to determine what the appropriate penalty is. But a warning letter is a confirmed violation. And if we can get compliance with a warning letter, that's where we'd like to start. But we're not going to send a warning letter out for the same thing over and over again. We're going to hopefully get compliance with the warning letter, but then we'll move to orders if necessary. Next. I do want to talk about our new CIRCON payment system. Speaking of penalties, can pay a penalty by a check. It's not quite as bad as carbon paper, but checks are sometimes difficult to come by, and people. So we've gotten into the electronic payment, and so you can pay penalties through the CIRCON payment system. There will be instructions if there's an order with the penalty associated with it. These instructions will be there also, but we did want to just kind of take this opportunity to let people know that you can now pay penalties electronically, and you don't have to send us a draft or come deliver a draft. So if you have any questions, here's some contact information about that. Next slide. So violations to watch. So this is a new slide. For those of you who've been attending these for multiple times, this is a new slide, but I thought you might be interested in, and one of the things that we're really looking at, what we're looking at. So the Texas Labor Code 408.027, and then the associated rule with it. So, obviously an insurance carrier is required to timely process and take final action on a completed medical bill within 45 days. We're seeing quite a few of that this isn't happening. We're seeing a lot of cases where the 45 day is being missed. And so, in fact, we have 71 active cases right now involving late actions on medical bills. And you saw my numbers. So 71 is not an insignificant number when it comes to our total cases. And along with that, of course, the requirement that a DD exams are ordered and payment of a DD exam is also of those medical provider late fee, late bill of action, about 41% of those of that 71 involve a DD exam. And DD exams are incredibly important in our system. And a DD exam obviously doesn't have pre-authorization. You have an order saying, you know, pay for this. And we're just not seeing, we're seeing an increase of not paying these DD exams on a timely manner. So we are looking at these and doing and emphasizing, looking at to see how we can get compliance, better compliance with these DDs and paying these medical, or at least paying, processing these medical bills in timely fashion. Next. So all our disciplinary orders are on the website and you can go and you can see them in their entirety. We do redact things if obviously things that work or that have to be redacted, anything that identifies an injured employee, those type of things that could, but most of our orders, we write them in such a way that we can put them in their entirety on the website. And so you can go here, here's the link to it. And I encourage you to look at those. Next slide. So that's the end of my presentation and I'll go ahead and turn it over to Mary.
Thank you, Deborah. Good afternoon to those of you that are here today. I say that because I'm actually a little bit shocked, surprised that there's so few of you attending this meeting. I'm hoping that what this means is that many of the folks that are not in attendance are on vacation. And so as a reminder, this presentation is posted online, the recording. We have lots of information that is being shared today. So I definitely encourage you to share that link with your coworkers to make sure that the word is spread as to the information that one, that Deborah just presented, and then the information that myself and others are going to present. So with that, I just wanted to let you know, I'm going to give you an update on three items, rural projects under my area, a key legislative bill that passed this session, and mentioned an issue with medical fee disputes. I will then turn it over to Chi-Chi, who is our new healthcare, our new director of healthcare business management for the Office of the Medical Advisor. Update, as you recall, last, I believe it was last quarter meeting, I had mentioned that she had just been hired. Chi-Chi will then turn it over to Santiago Calderon, who is the director for designated doctor operations, and he will provide a designated doctor program update. So for the update on my three items, as far as rules are concerned, there is a formal proposal on teledentistry that went out with a common period of that ends on July 28th. The amendments proposed conform section 13330 to Texas Occupations Code Chapter 111, which the legislature amended under House Bill 2056 to define teledentistry dental service. So that's one. The second one, it's a formal proposal on the Medical Quality Review Panel rules or MQRP rules. That comment period ends on 7/17. The proposed amendments conform with related rules and practices and clarify certain aspects of the ISC process or informal settlement conference. As part of that formal proposal, we also put out a formal medical quality review process proposal. That's our procedure, internal procedure on how OMA investigates complaints and how they carry out medical quality review audits. The common period for that proposal, it's also on 7/17. Now, so just not to scare you, most of the edits to this document are editorial in nature, mostly for plain language and agency style. But because of the many editorial edits, we also put a side-by-side comparison to make it easier on you when you do the review. Then another rule, so we are finalizing the third informal proposal on DD, designated doctor billing and reimbursement. You may be aware that House Bill 2702, which relates to DD payments to include a no-show fee, did not pass this last session. So we were monitoring that bill, and that's in part a little bit of the delay as to why that informal proposal has not gone out. But keep an eye on your email so that when that informal proposal is announced, you'll be ready to review and provide your comments. Another possible rule project is the review of Chapter 166, which is on accident prevention services. Workplace safety is reviewing language to determine what edits are necessary. So just stay tuned for more information on that rule project. And then moving on to the one bill, the key bill that I mentioned, that's Senate Bill 1122 relating to the exclusion of certain medical services to determine an appropriate level of work comp benefits from sales and use taxes. That bill passed. We are very excited about this rule being passed because what that means is that designated doctor exams are not taxable. They should not be billing for taxes and carriers should not be paying for those taxes. And then the last thing before I turn it over to Chi-Chi is really kind of an issue, something that I an ask, if you will, of you regarding network claims as it relates to medical fee disputes being submitted. So we have seen an increase on issues related to network claim reductions on explanation of benefits in which the carrier does not assert that that there is a certified network connected with that injured employee on the carrier's response or position statement. So when then the program, MFDR, conducts a review to determine if the injured employee is part of the network, oftentimes we have to contact the carrier and we get conflicting information from the carrier. Yes, the injured employee is part of the network or not, and it doesn't match necessarily the information on the explanation of benefit. So we ask that you pay attention to the explanation of benefits that are being submitted with disputes, that if there are network reductions that are being made, that you can please assert whether that injured employee is part of a network and make that known to us. Because as you know, if it's a network provider, network claim, and network services, everything's network, those really disputes do not belong in medical fee dispute. And if the healthcare provider in those cases is unaware, whether it's through healthcare provider outreach or through MFDR, we would make those calls to the healthcare providers and make sure that we do the proper outreach to ensure that they submit those disputes to the proper place. We do hope that the upcoming EDI 3.0 implementation will minimize this issue, as the network reporting is going to be a required field. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Chi-Chi so that she can provide an OMA update. Chi-Chi?
Okay. Thank you so much, Mary. Yeah. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Chi-Chi Onorebe, and I'm the new Director for Healthcare Business Management, reporting to Mary Landron. And I've been in this role since March of this year. Next slide. Okay. So quality of care complaints. For this calendar year 2023, the Office of the Medical Advisor, OMA, has received 65 complaints related to the standard and quality of care received, of which some have been fully investigated, while others are still going through their review process. 48 complaints have been closed this calendar year. Note that not all 48 complaints were received in this calendar year. 48% of these, OMA didn't find any compliance issues with the complaints. 23%, OMA sent this subject an education letter. 8% complaints continued with the medical quality review process to be reviewed by the members of the MQRP to determine if there are any non-compliance issue. And 21 of the complaints were also referred to enforcement for further action. Next slide, please. Medical quality review. This slide shows the work done by our MQRP members. It shows the number of quality reviews initiated where we assign cases to the MQRP members to determine if there are any non-compliance issue. So in this period, 10 reviews were initiated. Some are part of the return to work audit and other are just complaint based. OMA concluded the review of 22 cases where 23% of them were sent to enforcement for further review and 77 were closed with no other action. So before I go to the next slide, I want to share a bit of OMA audits that we're doing so far. The first one is return to work audit. An important goal of the Texas workers' compensation system is to return injured employees to safe and productive employment. The purpose of this audit is to promote the delivery of quality healthcare in a cost-effective manner, including protecting the safety of the injured employees, and also to ensure the doctor's decision and record keeping regarding return to work were reasonable and support the return to work outcomes and avoid unnecessary disability. The Office of the Medical Advisor is preparing to send out preliminary findings to the subjects. The second audit is the spinal cord simulator audit. So this audit was proposed on the 31st of May, seeking input for the audit plan. The comment period ended June 14th, and we received about 9 comments. Dr. Owen, our medical advisor, is looking into these comments for any edits to the plan. And the last audit is the gabapentin pregabalin with opioid audit. Preparation work has already started on this audit plan. We kicked off our work looking at the use of gabapentin pregabalin with the use of opioid medication. The purpose of this audit is to review the appropriate use of the healthcare providers' decision-making and record-keeping that supports prescribing gabapentin pregabalin in combination with opioid for each treatment plan tailored to a specific injured employees and supports return to work outcomes while improving the quality of life. Slide 3, please. Next slide, please.
Additional one, or is this one?
Yeah, that one, yeah. Next slide. As Deborah stated, OMA has begun the PBU assessment of healthcare providers. A reminder, OMA assists in the healthcare provider PBU assessment by having MQRP members review DWC 73 forms in which box C was marked, taking injured employees off work. The assessment is to determine whether the reason of the DWC 73 form and documentation supports taking injured employees off work. So this year, MQRP members will review 584 DWC 73 forms. For now, 584 assessments were received. None has been initiated or concluded. We expect to have these tasks completed in the next few months. Next slide, please. As for enforcement referrers, here's what OMA has done as well as enforcement on OMA cases. OMA referred 10 cases to enforcement. Enforcement closed one case with a consent order. 29 cases are still pending in enforcement, and there are 3 cases pending at SOAR. I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. And if I don't have answers to your questions, Mary is here to help answer them as well. Well, this is all I have. I will turn it over to San Diego, Director of Designated Doctors Operations. Thank you.
Thank you, Chichi. Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. I'm Santiago Calderon, Director of Designated Doctor Operations. I'll be covering Designated Doctor Program updates. Next slide, please. Okay, let's get started with the Designated Doctor homepage. If you see the chat, I placed the URL to the DD homepage. So you would want to follow that link to get to our homepage. I invite you to look at some of the resources and videos on the DD homepage. From this page, you can access the updated rule language, past presentations of recent changes, new forms, and videos about recent changes to Form 32 and how to complete the Form 32. For the parties that request designated doctor exams, I encourage you to pay special attention to the video on how to complete the Form 32. Please follow the links provided to learn more about the additional resources and videos. Next slide, please. Amendments to Rule 127 and 180.23 became effective on April 30th and June 5th of this year. As of April 30th, any doctor who passed the test at least once since May 13 of 2013 is no longer required to is no longer required to take the certification test every 2 years. DDs and other certifying doctors must still take required certification training every 2 years. As you may have guessed, we've been busy processing applications. From January through April of this year, we received 55 applications. Since April 30th, a total of 95 applications have been received. We received 55 in May, of which 27 were new applications. Of the 27, 13 are from physicians. So far in June, we received 40 applications, of which 27 are new applications. Of the 27, 7 are physicians. As of June 5th, DWC expanded DD qualifications to address traumatic brain injuries. The original board specialties of neurological surgery, neurology, physical medicine and rehab, and psychiatry remain. This amendment added approximately 55 physicians that are now qualified to examine traumatic brain injuries. For a complete list of the new board specialties, please visit the DD homepage, where you will find the adoption order. You'll want to reference rule section 127.130. Also, as of 6.5, for any new order DD exam, DDs will only complete multiple certifications of MMI and IR when ordered by DWC through a presiding officer's directive, also known as a POT. Next slide, please. So what else is new on, what else is new? Well, this section is new on the order. And this slide, we're going to cover examples of the new section on the commissioner's order for DD exams. The new order now contains the carrier billing information. Here, someone will find the insurance carrier name, mailing address, phone and fax number, and an email contact address. That's the first example that you see. If DWC does not have carrier billing information, then the order will have instructions to call the 1-800 number. That's the second example at the bottom. So what's important about this? Well, for you carriers out there, this is the information that is displayed here is directly from the CACI profile that you have established. So that means please keep your information current because that is what will be displayed on the order. Next slide, please. Okay. So two revised forms became effective on June 5th. You may visit the DD homepage to obtain a copy of the Form 32 or Form 68. If you need an unlocked copy of the Form 32 to load into your system, you should contact the web staff at webstaff@tdi.texas.gov. DWC will not approve any language changes to the form. Changes to Form 68 were minimal and only included style changes. The 67 that became effective on 4/30 is what doctors should use when they're applying for certification as a designated doctor. If there's not any questions, we can turn this on over to our hearings regional director of the Northern and Western regions, Ms. Jerry Lynn Thomas.
Thank you, Santiago. Thank you. My name is Jerry Thomas. I'm the regional director of the Northwestern region, and I'll be providing the hearings update today. Next slide, please. The designated doctor rules were updated. As you heard earlier in this presentation, the new rules restrict multiple certifications to only when ordered by DWIC. The new DWIC 32 no longer has boxes 37 or 38. Box 37 asks folks to list all injuries accepted as compensable by the insurance carrier. And box 38 was essentially relabeled as box 32. And it asks, has there been an approved DWIC Form 24, benefit dispute agreement, final DWIC decision, or final court order to determine compensable, determine the compensable injury? Next slide, please. The new rules prompted changes in our hearing, our procedure and hearings. Again, the new rules state that for designated doctor exams after June 5th, 2023, the designated doctor may provide multiple certifications only when directed by the division. What this means is that prior to the dispute resolution process, most disputes will not have multiple certifications based on the disputed conditions. Next slide, please. In response to the new rules, we developed a new process in hearings to start. DWIC will review all disputes received in hearings with the following issues: extent of injury, maximum medical improvement, and impairment rating. These are the types of disputes that typically require multiple certifications from a designated doctor, so we will work with parties to see if additional assistance is needed in those cases. Next slide, please. In order to assist the parties and see if multiple certifications are needed from the designated doctor, we created the Benefit Review Officer 1 or BRO 1 position. This is a new position. The BRO 1 will contact the parties for a list of accepted and disputed conditions. This includes calls to the parties and sending written requests for information to the parties. The consideration for success include that the parties must know the accepted and the disputed conditions early in a dispute so they can communicate that information to the BRO 1. The BRO 1 will reach out to help the parties identify the conditions, and they'll work to facilitate an agreement on extent of injury if possible. We encourage you folks to interact with the BRO 1s because their entire purpose is to assist the parties in obtaining certifications that are meaningful in resolving disputes. In addition, the BRO 1 will act as a single point of contact in these cases to enable a continuity of communication between the parties. Next slide, please. Once the information is received, the BRO 1 will issue a presiding officer directive to the designated doctor. The types of contact between the BRO 1 and the designated doctor will include requests for clarification or requests for an exam and multiple certifications. Specific instructions for the designated doctor will be in the directive or the letter of clarification. And the BRO 1s are trained to follow up with the designated doctor's office or the parties well in advance of the scheduled BRC. Our goal is to review all the maximum medical improvement, impairment rating, and extent of injury DWIC 45s, contact the parties and identify the accepted and the disputed conditions, order a designated doctor exam, and obtain the necessary certifications before the BRC. Next slide, please. This process will be beneficial to the parties. However, it's expected to add about 15 to 20 days to the number of days for dispute resolution. Therefore, we need assistance from all the system participants to help improve the timeliness of dispute resolution. We ask that you folks brainstorm on ways to reduce continuances and reduce last minute motions. We will have more brown bag seminars so we can interact with you folks more frequently and get your input on what is working and look for additional options. Of course, the brown bag seminars provide us all with a great opportunity to discuss new ideas and allow us to get input from the participants. Next slide, please. Are there any questions?
This is Melissa Steger. I've got a quick question. I may have just missed it. Will this process be applied to any hearing request involving MMIR? And so the extent of injury is going to be addressed even if extent of injury issues do not exist at the time?
For right now, our goal is to just flag the 45s that come in with MMIR and extent.
Those seem
to be the ones that lend themselves more to this process. Of course, we're open to other options as this project continues.
Okay. I just had a concern if this is going to generate issues that need dispute resolution when there really isn't an issue there, which again would clog up the system.
Correct. Any other questions? If not, then I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Ms. Donovan. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. Good afternoon, everyone. This quarter, I'm going to start with the research and evaluation group update. Then I'm going to provide the legislative update and end with a communications update. Next slide. The research and evaluation group has been busy working on several reports since our last meeting. Next slide. In April, the Red Group released the 2022 Employer Participation Report. What you're looking at on this slide is a snapshot of that report. Both the snapshot and the full report are available on the website. Some of those key findings are the employer subscription rate increased to 75% in 2022 from 72% in 2018. And the share of private sector employees working for subscribers is 83%, which is the highest in 12 years. The industry with the largest subscription rates is mining, utilities, and construction. Subscription rates among small employers decreased while staying stable for large employers. And the most common reason given by non-subscribers that they gave for not having workers' compensation coverage was that they had too few employees. 30% of non-subscriber employers provided occupational benefit plans in 2022, and that percentage has been relatively stable since 2012. 73% of the non-subscriber employees are covered by an occupational benefit plan in 2022. Just as a reminder, the alternative occupational benefit plans are benefit plans developed by non-subscribers that pay medical, wage replacement, or other types of benefits to employees injured on the job. These plans are not regulated by the Division of Workers' Compensation. Next slide. Reg also released the final COVID-19 fact sheet earlier this month, and it is also available on our website. As a reminder, DWC's data call was not extended because of the low number of COVID-19 claims. We anticipate that current trends will remain consistent moving forward. Please look out for our upcoming return to work report, which will be released soon. We also anticipate releasing health costs and utilization report, access to care report, and pharmacy closed formulary report this upcoming quarter. The Reg will also be proposing their 2024 research agenda for next year coming up as well. Next slide. For the legislative update, there were a record number of bills filed this session. It was an extremely busy session for workers' compensation. Next slide. So while it was a busy session for workers' compensation, a lot of those bills did not pass or were vetoed. I'm going to provide a brief legislative update about some key workers' compensation bills that have been enacted into law from this session. I know that I'm about to give you a lot of information, but like prior sessions, we will put a memo out about the key bills in July. The first bill, which was our legislative recommendation, Senate Bill 1122. As Mary indicated, this is a bill that we were very happy that got passed to exclude certain medical services performed to determine an appropriate level of workers' compensation benefits from sales and use taxes. This is a critical bill for the workers' compensation system. As with the previous couple of sessions, a key topic of interest was first responder benefits. I believe there were a total of 17 bills dealing with first responders or Texas military forces were filed, and that's with respect to workers' compensation benefits, with only a few ultimately passing. House Bill 90 concerns the Texas military forces, and it expands Texas Government Code Chapter 615, the death benefits to eligible survivors of a member of Texas military forces who's on active duty. These benefits are paid out by the employee's retirement system of Texas. This is not a workers' compensation benefit. If the eligible survivors are entitled to the benefit by ERS, it has no bearing on if their workers' compensation is compensable. The eligible survivors can collect for both. It also adds travel of Texas military forces to or from duty location to be in the course and scope of employment, and it expands coverage for post-traumatic stress disorder to include members of the Texas military forces on state active duty, and also includes members of the Texas military forces on state active duty. Notice I keep saying that, on state active duty. To receive expedited medical benefits for serious bodily injuries as defined by Texas Penal Code 107. One of the more significant changes to the system this session is House Bill 2468. This bill, this law amends and expands lifetime income benefits for first responders and now provides a review process of continued entitlement to those benefits. It also addresses outdated terminology by updating the definition of incurable insanity and imbecility to create new criteria for LIBS eligibility of a major permanent neurocognitive disorder that renders the injured employee permanently unemployable. The review process I just mentioned is every 5 years to determine if the injured first responder employee still meets all requirements for the continuation of LIBS eligibility. And the injured first responders must submit to a designated doctor exam to review all LIBS requirements still exist. And this review may suspend or terminate their entitlement to LIBS benefits. In addition to the five-year review, the injured first responder must annually certify that they have not been employed in the previous year. If the insurance carrier provides evidence to the commissioner that the injured first responder's certificate is not accurate, and the commissioner determines the evidence as sufficient, the insurance carrier may review the employee's entitlement to LIBS regardless of the date it was last reviewed. This review would also require the injured employee to be examined by a designated doctor to determine continued eligibility for LIBS. This law also expedites the dispute resolution process, including contested case hearings and appeals for the first responder LIBS claims if requested by the injured employee. House Bill 3335 amends Labor Code Section 401.026 to add police officer as defined first responders for purposes of that section when traveling under the course and scope of employment en route to an emergency call. It clarifies that travel to an emergency call places the first responders in the course and scope of employment. House Bill 471, as originally filed, made changes to the first responder workers' compensation presumption laws that impacted eligibility requirements for benefits such as tobacco usage and timelines for when a heart attack or stroke are presumed to be work-related. Ultimately, the law passed without any amendment to the Workers' Compensation Act. It makes changes to employer benefits for first responders under the local government code that provides, for example, salary continuation for up to a year in lieu of workers' compensation benefits. Next slide. Some of the other key bills affecting workers' compensation are House Bill 679, which amends the Business and Commerce Code for a construction contract or an agreement collateral to a construction contract may not require the contractor to have a specified experience modifier. It also amends Government Code Chapter 2252 to state that a governmental entity may not request or require an experience modifier in a bid, proposal, qualification, offer, or other response submitted as part of a selection process for the award of a contract or consider an experience modifier in the process of awarding a contract. For anyone that isn't familiar with what an experience modifier is, just a very short explanation is it's a number that adjusts an employer's workers' compensation insurance premium based on the employer's claim history and safety record and compares to industry in the same state. House Bill 2314 allows a beneficiary to file a workers' compensation claim for death benefit to both with the insurance carrier or DWC. An insurance carrier must notify DWC and maintain a record of any claim for death they receive. Senate Bill 1659 pushed the Sunset Advisory Commission's review date for the Division of Workers' Compensation, the Office of Injured Employee Counsel, Texas Department of Insurance, and the Office of Public Insurance Counsel back from 2025 to 2029. There are also some other bills not specific to workers' compensation that impact state agency operations that will be implemented, but I figured I would not bore y'all with those here today. Next slide. So that leads me to the communications update for this quarter. Next slide. If you haven't already, please sign up for our 2023 Texas Workers' Compensation Conference, which is coming up July 10th through 12th at the Hyatt Regency in Austin. The theme for this year is Basics and Beyond. We have 3 days of presentations, and we have something for everyone with over 20 sessions, and you can get up to 11 hours of Texas CLE credit for attorneys, TDI continuing education credit for insurance adjusters, SHRM credit for human resources professionals, and CDMS and CCM credits for rehabilitation providers. Some of the ones so far that appear to be generating the most interest are the basics of subrogating Texas workers' compensation claims, life of claim panel, fraud 101 overview, wage calculation guidelines, and we also have a meet the execs where we will be introducing ourselves in our program areas, and I would love to meet you all in person. So I will turn it over to Martha to give us an EDI update.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm gonna give you a brief update on the EDI project. Next slide. We are 34 days away from the live date for the new claim EDI standard. So getting very close, it's getting very busy internally with the IT project and also, of course, for trading partners out there, carriers and claim administrators. Everything is looking very good for the implementation. Most carriers have already completed testing. There are a handful of carriers that are still in the process, but overall that looks pretty good. According to the implementation schedule, release one will be accepted through 5 p.m. on July 25th, 2023. So that's at that point, we will no longer be accepting the old release one claim EDI standard. And release 3.1 starts to be accepted on July 26th, so the following day. Next slide. For help and support, technical questions start with our data collection agent, that's TXDWC EDI. There are some new FAQs that have been posted on the Claim EDI 3.1 website. So I encourage you all to take a look at those. And thank you, of course, for everybody who has sent questions in and asked questions about 3.1. That's how we're building our FAQs. So please keep those questions coming. If you need individual help or group training session, please send me an email. I will make some time, at least over the next couple of weeks through mid-July, to continue to have 1 hour virtual training sessions. I customize them to the attendees' needs. So whether it's a claim administrator with adjusters or something a little more technical, we can go ahead and schedule something that will help you, you know, get you to that implementation date. And you can learn how to prepare for implementation. So next slide. Billing for costs associated with claim EDI 3.1. So the division has started making contact with carriers that have received an invoice, but maybe have not paid those invoices. So if anybody out there needs help or has questions about billing, there's a few resource emails and a website that you can go read about the billing portion of 3.1. Next slide. So I know that was really quick, but if anybody has any questions about the implementation, please let me know. Go ahead and give me a call or send me an email. And that's all I have for today. Thank you.
All right, we're going to open up to any questions. I know we had a few in the chat about when we'll be developing some rules or forms for House Bill 2314.
Yeah, and hey, Stuart, and I see y'all's questions on that. We are working on that right now. We've got a rule team put together who are working to put out rules. We will try to get some guidance out there in the interim. I can't promise when that's going to be, but we'll we'll get on that. We've been working on the rule project, so you will see that soon, but we'll try to put some guidance out before that rule goes out officially.
Took the words right out of my mouth. Anybody have any other questions? All right, well, then we will move on to closing remarks from Commissioner Nelson.
Thank you. So I guess picking up where Martha left off with our EDI project, you know, this is a project 3 years in the making. Martha's led that project the whole time. She's been doing a great job. I think it's gone very smoothly for how many moving parts there are. I know it's a big change for some of you out there, for some of you that are right in a lot of other states, maybe not as much, but we appreciate all of your involvement throughout this process and the various stakeholder meetings and the trainings and the testings. So, you know, we appreciate that. We are still going to be here for y'all as this goes live next month. I think it's just over a month, July 26th. So, you know, we know there's going to be some hiccups. We know there's going to be some places where people stumble early on. We're here to help. So look at us as a resource as everyone's kind of learning this together. But again, just thank you for everyone's participation in that big project. As Kim said, it was a very busy session. You know, I've been doing this for several sessions now, and I think it was the most comp bills that I've seen filed. So I really just, I want to say a special thank you to Kim and Kate Sidora for their work as the GR team, and also Nicole Crossland, who's one of our younger attorneys here who helped out this session. She and that team did a great job of staying on point, making sure the legislature was getting what they needed, tracking a ton of bills. So, you know, they did a great job. So we're very lucky that they're here and have been able to stay on top of all that. Kim did a really good job going over all the bills, so I'm not going to rehash that, but I will harp on Senate Bill 1122 real quickly. You know, we've been working on all these changes to our DD system for a while now, different rule changes, different process changes, and to find out in late October that the comptroller had determined that those were now taxable of services was kind of a blow to us for all the work we've done and probably a surprise to the system. We're very lucky that we worked with the comptroller for them to delay the implementation of that guidance and for that bill to pass. So like Kim said, like Mary said, that applies to all DD exams. It also applies to RME exams and any MMI IR exam. So sales tax should not be getting charged or paid for any of those services. Speaking of DD and the changes that we've been working to implement, the rules 127 and 180 rules recently went into effect, like Santiago went over. And I don't know if you caught the numbers he mentioned, but since May, since those rules started going into effect, we have 54 applications for new designated doctors. 20 of those are physicians. I think that is proof of concept that these changes we're making are working. And, you know, we haven't actually even started paying them more. But we are going to keep moving forward with that rule as well. Like Mary said, we're going to be going out with another informal proposal on that. I actually just approved it today, so that should be going out sometime in the next few days, maybe sometime next week at the latest. It's going to be very similar to what the bill was that was filed this session and made it pretty far throughout the process. That was House Bill 2702. So I think we're going to try to find a happy medium from that bill and what some of the other folks were proposing, but be on the lookout for that. And again, it's informal. And the reason we do that is to get feedback from y'all. It helps us know what you're thinking, what your concerns are, what you think we're doing wrong or doing right, because we're a little more restricted when it's a formal proposal on changes we could make. So please take a look at that when it comes out and get us your comments. Along with that, you know, we wanted to make this process better for doctors. We wanted to bring in more doctors to the system. That was one of our stated goals. But we also want to ensure we have high quality DD exams. I think by bringing in higher caliber doctors who are interested in this due to less administrative burdens and to a higher pay, I think that'll help. But also internally, we're going to continue with our DD performance review process. our Office of Medical Advisory Area and our MQRP members are constantly reviewing doctors that hit certain thresholds. And then we look to see if when they apply, if they should be accepted back into the system. So we're going to continue with that. It's something that we are always active doing, even if you all might not see that reflected day to day. But that has been a focus of ours for several years, and it's going to continue to be. Real quickly, Jerry did a great job of highlighting everything that was going on in hearings. With all the process changes that are going on with the designated doctor exams, how this impacts the system is something we are going to be very focused on, and I'm sure you all will as well. You know, is it increasing the number of disputes? Is it dramatically drawing out how long disputes are taking? Those are things that we're going to keep a very close eye on. We already have a list of metrics that we're going to be monitoring to make sure we know what's going on in the system and to make adjustments as needed. So I think it's a relatively big change, but it's something that we are going to keep a very close eye on. Jerry also mentioned the Brown Bag specials or meetings. These are meetings that Alan Craddock and Jerry and some others have been doing around the state to try to reach people in different locations, you know, different carriers and adjusters and attorneys in different parts of the state. I think he's done about 4 or 5 of these so far. His next round, I know he's talking about going to Weslaco and probably going out to Lubbock or somewhere else in West Texas. And then I think we're trying to identify one more. So be on the lookout for those, but we are trying to get him all around the state to give people an opportunity to hear what he has to say. And those are really helpful. I mean, he sits down with folks and will talk to you for several hours about what's going on, changes he's thinking about our hearings processes. And it's kind of a nice open forum that he has to allow people to ask questions and to provide some open feedback. With rules, I know we mentioned it here that we currently have our MQRP information out for comment, our telemedicine rules out for comment. We're getting ready to do this DD informal proposal. We pressed pause during session so people didn't have to review rules and our and the bills coming out from the legislature. That doesn't mean we weren't working on rules internally. So I would say kind of get ready to see a lot of rules come out from us. We're gonna kind of hit the ground running. We have those going on. We have House Bill 2468. That was that LIBS bill. We're going to have some rules associated with that, which we're going to try to get done pretty quickly because that bill has a September 1st effective date. House Bill 90 may have some rules associated with it, and there may be a few others that have a few small rule projects. We're also going to be looking at our Chapter 166 rules. These are our accident prevention services rules. I feel that the statute's pretty prescriptive on what's required for insurance carriers to offer as far as safety services. So we're taking a look right now on how we can maybe scale back a little bit from all the requirements that are in that rule for complying with an audit. So stay tuned for that. We're still kind of working out the specifics on that, but it is going to be something we're looking into that I hope to get out informally sometime in the next month or two. We've also got a few other more internally focused rule projects, like how we docket things at SOA, but that's a pretty hefty list right now, and that's really just over the next 9 months to a year. So we're gonna have a lot of movement there. A few other things I wanted to touch on. I know we're running up against time. You may have seen it, but we recently, well, for a while, we've been hearing feedback that we send out a lot of emails. We provide a lot of information. We provide a lot of updates. It's all useful information. It's all stuff we think the system needs to know about, but it was a lot. And I think it was clogging up people's emails. And I think people tended to ignore some of those due to the volume. So we're going to try something new. We created something just this month called the DWC Digest or DWC Dispatch. I forget which one it's called. But it's going to be more information contained in one email. We're going to try to do one of those a week, and sort of our weekly update on what's going on and things you need to be aware of. That could have rule proposals in there. It could have forms to comment on. So make sure you do take a look at those, because it is going to have a lot of information. Now, I'm not saying we're never going to send more than one email in a week. You know, there's going to be things that come up y'all need to know about, but that is something we're trying, and I hope y'all like it. And if you have any thoughts on it, we'd love feedback on that. Two last things. We've been in this building, downtown Austin, for pretty much since September of last year. We, you know, it's a new building downtown. There's multiple state agencies in here. We know parking for visitors isn't great. I think we've done a good job with our hearings that are going on here to allow parking for that, but we know it's not great. And because of it being a state building, we're not the only agency here. There's some additional requirements. So dropping in, is it a little more difficult for people to do? And I think if you're going to drop in for something to try to drop something off, or you're coming in unexpectedly for whatever reason, just be a little patient with us. We do have someone down at the front desk. There is a process for how they need to reach out to those in the building to let them know you're here. But the fact is, it's not going to be as easy as it was at Metro. It's not going to be as easy as popping into one of our field offices. So just kind of bear with us there. But if you are working with someone and you're coming by to see them, it's probably a good idea to give them a heads up, and they can kind of help make that a lot smoother for you. The last thing, we have our conference coming up in July 10th through the 12th. It's turned into one of the biggest conferences in the country. I think we already have 610 people registered for it. We've got something for everyone. We've got, you know, courses for adjusters, healthcare providers, workplace safety consultants, attorneys. We have credits associated with all of that available. So I hope, if you are registered already, I hope you consider coming to Austin for that. It's a good opportunity to just network and talk to people and see what's going on. We're having a lot of our staff be there. We've got a session with all of our executive staff that's on that panel. So I think you'll have a good opportunity to interact with all of them. So, you know, I hope y'all consider attending that. And really, that's all I have. I'm happy to open up for a few questions if y'all have any. Speechless. All right. All right. Well, if there's no questions, we appreciate your all's time, and I hope to see some of y'all at the conference in a month.
Thanks again, everyone. Appreciate it.